Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Philip.
Thanks very much for joining me. First things first, before we go any further, can we just check that it is in fact discredited that vaccines do not induce autism?
That the relevant research that was supposedly the genesis of all this discussion has been thoroughly discredited, the Wakefield study, and there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever to link the two. Let me be categorical about that.
Okay, just so we're 100% clear before we get any further into this. Now, can you also please tell us a bit about the new vaccination scheme and how it works?
Well, it's essentially, you're referring to the government's new incentives and the program around ensuring that there is a wider take-up and a wider incentivization of all in the community to ensure that the vaccination rates are kept as close to the to 95% or better, because that's the ultimate aim, is to ensure that what we call that herd immunity in the community to protect not only your child, anyone's child in particular, but to protect the community as a whole, especially those members of the community that can't, for medical reasons, because they're undergoing chemotherapy for associated tumours, because they've got a certain allergy, because of an immune system issue that they can't have the vaccination, they are susceptible to any outbreak of the various illnesses and diseases that we immunise against. So it's important to have that herd immunity, that 93% or better, and when the target is 95% or better is really even a much more admirable level to get to. That will protect the community as a whole from outbreaks, from little pockets rearing their heads and having situations like what we had in some states over the recent few years, where we've had cases of measles and clumps of 10s or 12s or 15s in a class being reported. And that is not desirable. That is not a safe outcome. And that is putting the members of the community at risk.
Yeah. Definitely.
I'm sorry, and you were asking about the government's policy. So basically, the federal government now has what we call a no jab, no pay system, and that has led over the last 12 months to 200,000 extra people ensuring that they reverse their previous tardiness in achieving their vaccination status and have subsequently maintained or fully immunised themselves. That's been a positive outcome. So that's where family tax benefit payments and other childcare payments are withheld unless immunisation records are up to scratch. So that's a national federal scheme. But some states now also have gone one step further, and especially the eastern states, and they have got what we refer to as a no jab, no play policy, and so that childcare centres can't take on the care of those children that don't have a fully up-to-date immunisation schedule.
That does seem like a very positive move to take things further with that no pay, no play policy as well. Now, what sort of epidemic diseases might we see risking re-entering, the population, if vaccination levels did fall?
So, look, the ones that popularly hit the media very regularly in recent times now is measles. I've referenced that, but we've just had a case, and we've still got the case on the northern New South Wales coast of a young 7-year-old that just contracted tetanus. Now, that in itself is really worrying. I mean, tetanus, there were several hundred cases of tetanus a year prior to immunisation, a lot of which resulted in mortality. It's something that the average paediatrician doesn't see, not GP, the average paediatrician doesn't see regularly, and now we're seeing cases sporadic, and that does concern that the potential that those types of conditions, which were heretofore unrecognised or unseen in the community, are coming back.
Right. That's definitely something we want to avoid. And I certainly remember my immunisation for tetanus. I was not happy about it as a young child, but I suppose it's come to pay me back very, very kindly.
Well, and a very simple immunisation policy. What used to be if we go back a number of decades, it used to be called the triple antigen. There was a 3-in-1, but now we've got, you know, up to 6 or even 7 vaccines all in the one, or components in the one vaccine. And that allows that a very safe and very easy immunisation schedule at various points in the child's first year of life, and then continuing on at 18 months through to 5 years. And it's so easily done, and for a member of the community as helpless and as innocent as children, who really do know, who are very vulnerable to and very susceptible to these diseases if not protected, it's such a simple step to make, a simple step to take to ensure that they're looked after and protected from quite severe morbidity and mortality.
Mm. Well, I understand a recent study has identified that 8% of the population does identify as vaccination hesitant and are resistant to the changes, potentially because parents might not have seen the sorts of diseases that were going around before vaccination was so well facilitated. What would you say to these people?
Generations sometimes have short memories, and unfortunately, we've now gone through a period where a new generation or two who weren't exposed to the outcomes of, for example, polio, with the calipers on legs, with the iron lungs. I was when I trained, there were still significant numbers of patients on iron lungs in the ward that I at a hospital that I trained at, and that is a memory that will never leave my mind. And basically, unfortunately, perhaps, you know, has that absence of necessity, of need in the community has perhaps coloured the view or the thinking of many. But we know that vaccination is safe, vaccination is simple, and vaccination will save lives. And that's the message we need to continually get across to the community.
If you've just tuned in to 2SER, I'm speaking to Dr. Tony Bartone, Vice President of the Australian Medical Association, in regards to Pauline Hanson's claims about vaccination in Australia. Now, I find it quite ironic that Pauline Hanson is encouraging parents to do their research about vaccination before getting their kids vaccinated, however, without seeming to have done her own research and learned that autism does have absolutely no link to vaccination. Now, One Nation does hold 10% of the vote, and people do seem to give a lot of legitimacy to what Pauline Hanson says. Why would you say it's important for her to refrain from making statements like she did, given how much they can potentially jeopardise community health?
Public health is a very serious issue, and if anyone, elected official or otherwise, who holds a position of influence in the community, should respect the evidence, and the evidence is clear. In fairness to Pauline Hanson, she has subsequently come out and acknowledged the error of her ways, and she's repudiated the statements she made, and she has acknowledged that the extreme body of evidence does absolutely implore the need for vaccination, and she's come out and reversed her commentary. However, it does show the influence that people in those positions carry, and if they're going to talk on matters of health, they really need to ensure they are consistent with all the various evidence and the people who are the regulatory leaders and the stakeholders in that area before making comments to the wider population. And I think this is a very good case in point where that unfortunately wasn't done, and serious damage was done, but hopefully has now can be potentially minimised and reversed over the course of time.
Mm. Yeah, well, crying nanny state is one thing when it's about your own health, but when it does come to community health and the wider population, it does seem very risky. Tony, thanks so much for joining me this morning to A, dispel some myths, and B, provide more information about vaccination and the new scheme that we have in Australia. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Have a good morning.